Hi, I'm Josh, and I woke in fright.
I am... Shit, I forgot the other movie's names. I am Matt, and, I am what I am. God damn it, that's dumb.
Can I tell you what you are?
Kind of a Popeye sort of thing there.
Yeah. Oh, if only we'd watched Robin Williams and Popeye instead of some of these movies.
And that's Charlie, and he is a battery.
Yes.
I'm sorry, you gotta be a battery. You come third,
okay.
you take what you can get. This is why Adam usually just sits there in stone-faced silence.
Yep. At least we assume it's stone-faced. We can't actually see him.
Right now, Adam is busy doing big, important Hollywood stuff, but we got Charlie in, and we are ready for some horror show hot dog, and I hope you are too. Alright, so this week we took a couple of movie suggestions from Charlie Butterman, our guest and guest once again, and we grabbed one that Adam had sitting on his computer and wanted to watch, because Adam is bigger than us and physically intimidates us.
Even from halfway across the country.
Indeed.
He casts a long shadow.
I think it's the donut graphic that does it.
Yeah.
He casts kind of a wide shadow, too, let's be honest.
Yeah, to be fair, yes.
I cast a round shadow.
Yeah.
Does that help? Who knows what donuts lurk in the hearts of men? The round shadow knows.
God damn it. What are we talking about?
Lord.
So we're going to kick it off with We Are What We Are, or Somos Lo Que Somos. Although, I guess in the actual Spanish version, this was called Lamb Sunday. Lamb.
Oh, is that what that translates to?
Yeah, or jam tomorrow.
So, okay, yeah, that, yeah, the credits on this, it was, like, directed by yada yada, written by yada yada, based on a screenplay by whoever. And I was like, I feel like if you hired writers after you already had the screenplay, you're doing it wrong.
Right.
Like, is this a remake from a foreign film?
It
or did
is,
they just go, we like yes. your story, but not your screen, but not your treatment of it?
It is a...
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about it that way.
It is a remake of...
It is.
Although, huh, no, it was called Somos Lo Que Hay.
Which is what?
We Are What There Is.
Oh.
Which is, seriously, though, Somos Lo Que Hay is We Are What There Is, not We Are... like... I'm all you get, kind of.
Sure, yeah.
We are what there is. We are what we are. And in that one, it looks like it's a female lead. I didn't get to see the Spanish one. What did you think?
The Spanish one's the one I very much love. But this is very. This has a totally different feel, a different dynamic, and partly because the father figure in this one versus in the original, it's the mom is who's left. The father dies at the very beginning.
Huh. Interesting.
So you get this whole kind of like Oedipal thing in the original, whereas this one it gets the father who's about as formidable as a wet loaf of toast in a gutter as far as being a formidable character, versus in the original where the mother seems very very conniving and very controlling in this kind of passive way. So it's real different, parental figure one to the other.
Well, we should point out for the folks that do listen to the show but don't get a chance to watch all the movies, basically what we have is you have a strictly religious family in a religious sect that seems to include only their family.
Right.
Not like Westboro cray-cray in that way, but crazy in their own way, because as we find out over the course of the film, they kind of believe it's to stay close to God and live well, they have to eat people. Because, as we find out through the daughter reading, like, a journal or something, that back in the late 1700s, like, their pioneering forebears got stranded somewhere, and Pa and Uncle Mac or whatever went out to find food. Pa came back with meat and said Uncle Mac had continued on. And since then, they've been cannibals. Which led to, of course, my question to just immediately start being like, but what about, where do you get new people to join said family to keep said lineage going? Because, like, at some point, either, your boys or girls have to go out and marry somebody.
Mm.
And now that person hasn't grown up thinking it's normal to eat human for X number of years.
Right.
I feel like it'd be real tough at, like, 18, 17, 25, whenever it is that person meets someone and gets married, to be like, BT Dubs, when you're washing up for dinner, it's Susan from down the street. Like...
But they are.
You know, the impression that I got with that, I mean, I think you make a very good point. The impression that I got from this one, and maybe it's just the textural quality, the way it was filmed, or just the somber nature of it. The other one, the original, looks a little more vibrant. The original is set, I believe it's set in Mexico City or somewhere, an outlying city, but it's partly it has to do with, you know, the poverty of where they live in. And they kind of carry over to this one a little bit. The impression I got with this new one was that they're kind of carrying it like a, like this is sort of this dying out of this sort of tradition. Like this is kind of the tail end of it. Like,
yeah, this is our
times now.
Yeah, this is the last family. So maybe it was like a whole village of people that did that. And so you had people with whom they were already down with the sickness.
Right. Yeah, I mean, exactly. Well, speaking of which, though, there's the idea that they get sick if they don't have their special sacrifice and eat a person every so often.
Well, is it that they're...
And the kid gets... Like, the little boy actually gets pretty heavily ill. And, like, everybody starts getting twitchy and weird until they kill and eat. So I kind of wondered if there
was... That's
also
partly fasting, though,
there
right?
was a supernatural thing going on there or not.
I never took any of it as supernatural. I took that as, like, okay, they're fasting for a while, so the kid's all whiny. And that's why Dad's all weak, because they say, you know, he hasn't eaten since Mom died. So, like, he goes however many... Because they're doing a fast, then Mom dies and he doesn't eat. And Dad is already in the advanced stages of, what is it, Kugu? Or what was the disease that the doctor looks up? That's the one you get from eating human brains. Yeah. So Dad's already... Dad's suffering from that disease, which explains a lot of Dad's erratic behavior and weakness. Whereas the girls seem relatively hale and hearty, but just hungry. And it would make sense, though, if you're raised on a very limited diet... Eating something that's wildly outside of that, like sugar cereal, if you're sticking only to, like, meat and potatoes from your backyard, something that's got... You know, it's the same thing, like, if we would go to Guadalajara and eat something that's perfectly normal there, odds are we'd get sick. So, to me, none of that has to be supernatural. It just has to do with the idea, you know, they got to butcher something and get some regular food they can eat on the table, or they're going to have, essentially, just non-cannibal dysentery.
Yeah.
Like, realistically, I think they could have gone and bought steaks. I think that would work.
See, I for some reason, thought they were kind of vampires the entire way through. Mm. And that there was a, like, they were different creatures than just people.
I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with reading it that way, but it doesn't have to be that way.
It is a little, it's pretty ambiguous.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like, the movie can be that or not, and either way, I think the movie still holds up with all the ways it does. Like, that neither adds nor detracts for me.
Yeah.
If there's a supernatural element to that. I think it doesn't need it, and I kind of like that it didn't have one. I'm not normally a fan of movies that are just a dude that is the killer.
Yeah.
But I thought this one was interesting enough that...
But you've got those little, like, the threads that are intercoursing throughout the intercoursing. the doctor finding a single bone.
And was it like then, a finger bone?
Yeah,
tiny.
Like, and then doing his forensic shit on that to the, like, flood that floods everything out. And, like, Dad trying to catch all the people bones as they're going downstream is...
Yeah, Dad having his, like, kind
impressive.
Of impotent rage screaming at the sky moment. Is kind of satisfying. And that also, I think, you know, lends you the weight that, yeah, that whole family's been there doing this for 300 years now.
Yeah.
With the amount of bones that are just poking out of the hill and, like, you know, one kind of shitty flood is enough to bring that up. Although, and I thought they'd make more of this, is that the couple that we see in the police station that comes in because their daughter's missing is the body and car found in the water once the water starts to recede.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, like that... I thought that would be teased as a way to throw suspicion off. It's like, oh, so these people that are missing, you know, look, there is a rational explanation. That would explain away your daughter. See, stop worrying.
Right.
And then they never do that, though. They just happen to find that one person, and this family happened to not kill her. So it didn't really go anywhere, and I really thought that would end up being like a weird red herring for the investigative people in the movie, and nothing comes of it.
I thought it was interesting that... Just for the audience, like, we're made to think that that's the girl they've got in the basement, and then it's just not.
Yeah, that's true.
That was cool. But then also, we find out the daughter has the hair clip that was the doctor's daughter's.
Yeah.
And yeah, the Michael Parks character.
That kind of brings everything...
He's really good. I love that dude in anything.
Yeah.
Oh, God, he's excellent.
He's super, just so good. So satisfying.
Yeah, especially after being handed... pile of ham chunks and shit in the Red State script. he gets something a little bit better in this one.
I liked Red State.
I think I'm going to have to, like, I almost high-fived the microphone when you said that, because I hated Red State.
And I loved it. I thought it was really fun. I think Adam liked it, too. Yeah. That was a really divisive title for us.
See, we can have a different dynamic if we have Adam's past history, and now we have four.
We have
two-on-two matches
Interesting.
Here. Interesting. Because that... The ending of Red State was bullshit. And
speaking of
the middle of it was boring.
Speaking of endings, I did not see the ferocity of the ending of this one coming.
Oh yeah. God, yes!
Holy shit! Because I was like, and by the way, this movie when they sit down to have their first like human stew meal after the little girls finally go through with killing someone and butchering them, which they don't show really any of. That's very sparse. Which I actually liked. I thought it was a smart choice. Because it still is really impactful, but they do it off-screen in a very smart way. But they sit down and they have the most uninteresting, normal-looking, bland-looking cafeteria stew. And then watching them eat it is nauseating.
Right.
Because you know what it is, and the looks on the kids' faces, like, they sell the idea of how horrible it is so well that even though there is nothing untoward on screen... I was just put off. I was like, this is fucking foul, and I love it. Like, and it's just... Beef stew. You know, nothing weird about
it. That's the thing.
They sell it.
Yeah, they get this tension around some of these scenes. The one later on when the Michael Parks, the doc character, is at the house.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's no really implied inevitable threat right immediately, but you're just sort of like, oh, Christ, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? And you almost have that same feeling when you're watching the Heat. You're like, oh, God. Oh, that's actually, yeah. Yep, that's what's actually happening.
Yep.
And it's just sort of like, and they make you sit there. Like, you're sitting at a table, you can't get away. It's not like it's a real brief little 30-second little scene. I mean, it goes and carries and...
It's very patient.
But that was part of the, like, part of where I got the... Just imagining that the family was right and that they needed to eat people to survive. Because they were all so, like, oh, thank God. You know, now I can eat, and the kid just kind of bolting it down, and I guess the same thing would be true if he was just starving.
Just hungry.
But...
Yeah, because I feel like that, to me, that just showed kind of that, despite the fact that neither of the girls really wanted to do that, the boy is just oblivious. But the girls clearly didn't want to be doing that anymore, especially Iris.
I think that they had not given a shit before. But the first time that they had to make the kill,
right,
made that connection.
Yeah, and so you can tell that they're not into it now. But to me, that just showed how imposing, like, the looming specter of Dad's will was in that home where, I mean, that is a very totalitarian household backed by Dad and the power of God, you know?
How fucked up is the backstory they tell the kid, by the way, the little boy? Like, there's a monster in the basement, and we have to kill it, and then... We'll eat it, and then, you know...
Then we don't have to be afraid of the dark.
It's like, the monster isn't happy, it's sad.
Yeah. The,
Shit.
But we have, you know, so you have your confrontation between Doc and the dad, and, Rose, you know, gets winged in the dome, and Iris runs out with, I forget the little boy's name. And, you know... All that kind of comes, Dad gets them all back together and sits them all back down at the table to eat their poison stew. And then you know that Iris is not having it, and she's maybe, because she's sobbing, she looks like the one that might just break and either bolt for it or maybe attack Dad or something. But when Iris does attack Dad, and you're like, oh shit, and she like bites his neck, did not see the other sister being involved with the wherewithal to like stab Dan's hand to the table and then bite him too. And then when they both done that and they sit back, the fact that they're chewing.
Yeah.
They didn't just bite him to get him to bleed, to kill him. They're eating him. And then they go back for more, and I was like, Jesus Christ!
And over and over.
You think it's done, they go back for another bite, and they're just, like, gulping it down and just eating Dad. And little boy just hides under the table, and you're like, this is fucked, man. Like, that is one of the crazier scenes I've seen in the movie, and I was like, yep, she'd be okay with the idea of probably biting a human.
Yeah.
You know, like, I get that, but the idea that it's like, no, we're gonna, like, eat him to death was way beyond anything I expected to see.
What was interesting about that, too, is that they don't introduce some big, long, expositive medical thing of, like, outside of a very little thing relating to the beginning, you know, in terms of the a kind of disease, so to speak. And they could have gone into some big rigmarole about how it makes you manic, how it makes you crazy, how it makes you hit your neighbor, all this kind of stuff. And they don't do any of that, and they don't go into some big, long, you know, scientific baloney, mm-hmm. you know, to kind of lay it all out. And I thought that was a great thing, but then also, like, if you're so settled into the somberness of it and how calm and how muted everything is, and then they just go, you know, just batshit crazy in the last 10 minutes. It's like, it kind of, I mean, it's pretty abrupt, you know, it's pretty...
But I don't
it's
feel
a
like
shift that's pretty heavy.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't feel like it was unwarranted or didn't fit the movie.
No, I think they earned it.
I do, yeah, and that's part of what, again, I think makes this a really good movie, is that it's... I was really invested. I feel like the characters were pretty damn well fleshed out. The little boy gets kind of short shrift, but
sure.
That's fine.
But he's not that interesting. Come on, he's a fucking kid.
He's cute, whatever. But, you know what I mean? But, like, I thought the characters were all interesting, and, you know, they make some stupid horror movie mistakes, but you're gonna. But overall, like, smart, interesting characters, cared about what happened to people, felt genuine tension, and then it's like, yeah, so when things go bug nutty at the end, it's kind of a relief tonal change as opposed to, oh, great. So it's like, you know, the people that complained that From Dusk Till Dawn was this, you know, heist movie, and all of a sudden it's fucking vampires and wacky.
Right.
That's a movie that didn't set you up to go, oh, I'll accept this crazy change in tone.
Right.
And I like that movie, that's fine. But, like, I get that complaint, whereas this one, like, I was primed for the idea that, yep, okay, cool.
It's just the storm finally
that.
Breaking, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
The tension that's been building the entire time.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it's cathartic.
Do you think that, and I've been wanting to ask some people who have actually seen this movie this question, because it's been bobbing around my head for a while. Do you think that the situation with the older daughter, Iris, the older one, in terms of, like, you know, the kind of having to live with or kind of come to grips with having to kill the person that got captured and all this, that kind of thing, taking the mantle, so to speak, and the conflict that she's having because she's, like, she has sort of real-life, day-to-day interactions and the kind of cute boy stuff and all the rest of the kind of thing. Do you think that this has been a conflict in this family lineage for a long time, or do you think it's like this is finally coming to the end of the rope because there's social media and because there's modern times and all this kind of stuff? Do you think it's like this has been a conflict for members of this family for a long time, or is this sort of like kind of a product of this is some of the end of the line?
Well,
it seems to me like it seems like I could see there being like a huge conflict with, like, even though I need to eat, even though this is our family tradition, blah, 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 blah. I could see where, like, 100 years before, 200 years before, whatever, there could still be that conflict of, like, can we do this? Is this, you know, can I go through with it? And I like to think that this is, it's happened before.
I feel like it would only make sense that it would have come up.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be harder and harder not to have that come up more and more frequently as isolation dwindles. You know, I feel because even if you have, let's say, you're a community of 50, so then either you are waiting for, you know, passing strangers to kill, or you're killing from within your community. And in a small, tight-knit community, I think people would go, but I don't want to eat John from next door. You know, like, whereas as you get to the less isolation of the modern era, I feel like that would come up more commonly because you'd have, you have the wider world is available to these people, and there are many examples of people that don't live that way, which I think comes through in Iris's kind of constantly pleading with Rose. Like, we don't have to do, he can't make us do this. What if we were different? You know, like, I think she's got the idea that, like, everybody else seems to be getting along without having to do this horrible thing that we don't want to do. Why don't we go be like them?
I think it is the, like, the tale as old as time, though. You don't really need the cannibalism angle to see this play out a lot. You know, just as far as family dynamics go, there's always, we don't have to do what our parents have done forever just because they say it's the thing we should do.
Yeah, it's, you know, the teenage rebellion.
Yeah, well, it usually
perfectly with that.
Usually features less chewing.
Right.
But,
I mean, yeah, I think it only makes sense that there would be people for whom
I can
this
see,
would be
though,
repugnant.
Like, way back in the day, that the rule of the patriarch over the household would have been so absolute that it would not have even occurred to even his wife to question him.
Right. I feel like, it'd be hard. Yeah.
Times,
and because, you know, Dad clearly wants to brook no argument. His word is law. They still dress puritanically, you know, for dinner, and it's like they're obviously holding on to an earlier era despite the idea, you know, they, despite the idea that, they drive a truck. Right. And, you know, they obviously interact with Amish. The town. They, you know, take rent from people from, like, a trailer park they own, apparently, is kind of the way they make their living or something.
Yeah, they've got the lady from Top Gun who has not aged gracefully.
So, you know, it's like, it's there. They are adjacent to the modern world.
Yeah.
You know, but they're not truly part of it. And I think that is because, one, you need to maintain secrecy with this kind of a scam. And also, two, I think that makes it, the more insular you are, the easier it is to propagate and continue that. Because if you blended too seamlessly, I feel like people would adapt their way out of that lifestyle more quickly. I don't know. Good shit. Do we want to, anything else we have to talk about this one? Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, I would. I think we can wrap on it. It is slow, and it takes a degree of patience and just kind of easing into it to just let it go, but it's so atmospheric at the same time that you still, it still pulls you in. And when you get those violent hits, they are just gut punches. Mm-hmm. Like, the very little you see of the butchering of the girl, mm-hmm. the, like, murdering daughter's first sexual partner while he's still inside her.
Which is how I would like to go, I'd like to say, though. If I'm gonna die, balls deep in a girl is probably the best way to go.
Well, for him it's great, but for her... See the trauma. Jesus Christ. And then the just the eating at the end is just like, I actually caught myself looking away a couple of times, I hardly ever do.
Yep.
Because it is, I think that's where that atmosphere pays off, because it's been so deadly serious. There is no, like, dead alive or, you know, black sheep hiding from the gore in a laugh.
Right.
Because it's just, this is such a real world, and man, those effects are good and just visceral. Mm-hmm. And you just, like, watch how far she has to pull the skin to get it to snap, and you're like, gosh!
Well, you know, the other thing with that scene, too, that I think actually does make it so it doesn't go completely gonzo batshit crazy, even though it is batshit crazy, is the fact that they don't change necessarily the filming style or the tone or the lighting or the way it's done. I mean, if it just sort of went into, like, you know, crazy, like, Grindhouse kind of
shaky cam
Rob Zombie, yeah,
you know, yeah, like, exactly, yeah, if it went into this Rob Zombie baloney all of a sudden, you'd be like, well, wait, I'm just taking out of this because they're just going gonzo for gonzo's sake versus being shocking for the content that it actually is. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, by keeping that same tone and the same embers and those same grays and stuff, but having it be this, like, shocking kind of thing with Julia Garner and Amber Childress, who are both the two leads, are, like, very angelic, you know, just watching this ugly thing play out. I love the fact that they didn't change that style, because it just made it that much more consistent, you know, in that regard, even though it is still just nutty.
Yeah, I think by having a pedestrian,
it's very matter
view,
of fact.
Yeah, of crazy, obscene, you know, event, yeah, it draws into sharper focus how crazy it is. That probably did help.
Yeah, very well said.
What do you want to rate this one, Josh?
It was interesting to now think about it the way that you are, because I had kind of gone with Dad is basically right, that they have to eat people to survive because they are something other than human. And that's, like you said, that's not really in the text. Everything that you see could also be just what Dad's been feeding them for years. I always think supernatural shit is more interesting than just people being horrible, but if there's nothing in them that makes them need flesh, that's the scene eating Dad at the end is even worse.
Yeah.
In a way, so...
Yeah, that's true.
This is... Yeah, it was, like, entertaining to watch and fascinating and brutal, so I would hit it around, like, a... even up to, you know, like, a 7 3/4 out of 10... severed finger bones.
I went into this completely cold. Did not watch the trailer. I, you know, wasn't part of whatever discussion you might have had where Adam talked about wanting to watch it. So I just clicked play and had no idea where the horror was going to come from. Obviously, there's something off about the family, and so, you know, it's going to involve them. But I, you know, so I was watching the people in the movie piece together, shit, they're cannibals, and going, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I figured, you know, okay, they're killing somebody, because obviously there's enough breadcrumbs to know that they've got people locked up or whatever. But then when you get to the point where, like, you realize, oh, they're eating them. I was like, damn, I did not know that was what this was. Okay, wow. And I still had a good chunk of the movie left at that point. So then I was like, wow, now how deep we're going to get into that? And I really liked the direction they took because, and don't get me wrong, I like, you know, Cannibal Holocaust or whatever, but this is a much smarter kind of cannibal movie and is very enjoyable in that way. I didn't find it slow because I was enjoying piecing together what was going on along with the movie, and I think that was certainly helped by not knowing going in. If you know, oh, it's Cannibal Family, you're going to want to get to that part, because I think if you know the gag, you want to just see the gag at that point. Well, it's like reading a walkthrough. You want to get to the best level of the game then and see that, you know, so.
Like, you can do a slow and atmospheric movie and have it really pay off.
Sure.
And, like, I don't think usually of slow as an insult, except in the cases where slow turns to dull.
Right. No, that's true, yeah. I guess, yeah, patient, I guess, is kind of my positive one.
Right.
Slow is the one where I'm bored. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. I just thought it was really well done. And the parts that really kind of got to me had my stomach in knots, so that was really good. One of the better movies I've seen in a long time. So I'm going to go like an 8.5 out of 10 shovels to the back of the head. Mid-coitus.
Coitus interruptus indeed.
What do you think, Charlie?
I went back and rewatched it, and I didn't feel as completely knocked out of left field by that ending as I did when I saw it last fall. But it's one of those things where, you know, as beautiful as this film is, amazingly gorgeous film to look at, and as well done as the actors are, whatever else, I also kind of, you know, feel like there could have been more words, and, you know, and as much as I appreciate it, even more so now than when I saw it in the theater, I think that there's some, maybe not as much as exposition, as much as there just could have been more with these characters, because you feel for them, but at least I feel for them, but to a point. So I wanted to kind of stay around what I did at the time, which is, call it like about a 6.75 to with gusts up to 7, depending on the rain forecast, you know, like some of that.
That's where we're going to get into, like, 8 or 9 point decimals.
Yeah, I've enjoyed watching the fractions get more and more ridiculous.
It's like, look, this was clearly a 6.357, not a 6.368.
I'm going to write the next movie Pi.
Wait, we're watching Pi?
Should we jump in another one, or you want to take a break?
Like, damn it, I'm a fat kid. Don't tease me with Pi.
Don't Pi me, bro.
We're right about closing in on a half hour, so I think we should take a quick break and be back in a second with Wake and Frights. So next up we have our, like, a kind of odd man out this week, Wake and Fright, or Despierta en Espantas.
That sounds good. I like the title on that one.
Yeah.
I'm
sad that I had to look up the verb for to wake. It's been a long time since college Spanish. excuse me. So, we're in Australia in the 70s.
Yeah.
We got a dude who is in, like, shit town Australia who travels.
But we don't mean shit town like ghetto-y part of Chicago. We mean three buildings next to a railroad track.
Yeah, we mean Crocodile Dundee goes there and goes, crikey, this place is dead.
The names of towns were amazing in this movie.
Tabunda and...
Tabunda.
What's the other one? The Yabo?
It was a much longer thing, but they just called it Yabba.
Yeah, it's
Bunda
Yabba. Yeah.
Bunda
Yabba.
Bunda Yabba, everyone.
So, I know Adam is already screaming at his iPod as he listens to this episode, going, it's not a horror movie. So, I'm going to bring that up.
It is maybe a horror movie if you're a kangaroo.
Certainly.
Or if... In the, an even more subtle than Ty Westian, like, the existential horror of being a human being?
I guess if you consider, like, financial ruin horrifying.
Which it is, but that's the reason why I watch movies where, like, teenagers get disemboweled or pulled into hell by demons, because that is a horrifying that I can understand. financial.
Yeah, that's a very real fear of mine.
Well, I guess it's
opposed to dragons or something.
It's a thing that you can fight, as opposed to financial ruin. You know,
right?
Well, this is a guy who he goes from shithole Australia to fuck ass Australia and loses his money betting, like trying to get what, $1,000 to buy out his teaching contract so he doesn't have to teach anymore.
Well, it's either so that he doesn't have to teach or he can stop teaching in shitholes. Like, it's something along the lines of you get your education and then you have to go teach until you've earned enough to buy out your bond, and then you can go wherever you want, and they send you to little shitholes where no one would go teach otherwise.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's just kind of stuck doing, like, an interminable residency.
Right.
As he makes his shitty teacher's salary. And so he has the chance to try to win enough money to buy it out in a single night on Christmas vacation.
He doesn't go there on purpose. That's not the reason for him going there, though. It's just upon this crazy backwoods sort of betting thing.
Just to stop for the night before he left for an actual destination the next morning, but then he gets embroiled in the idea of, you know, the allure of having a quick winning streak and thinking that for some reason that will continue.
Yeah.
As opposed to just having a fuck ton of money on the rest of his vacation and putting some in the bank.
I love how quickly he goes from, look at these retards betting on two coins.
Literally flipping coins, yeah.
And from to, like, I can magically influence the coins.
Yeah.
Can you? Can you, fancy man? Can you?
So, yeah, loses all his money, and everybody in town is a raging alcoholic because there's nothing to do. And after he loses his money, someone's always around to buy him a drink. And he gets drunk for, it's only a weekend. It's like in 3 days his life
pretty
goes
much
to utter shit. And then he tries to kill himself and fucks it up. And then they just kind of take pity on him.
Really long weekend, the Australian movie. Well, I mean, apparently Australians have this thing with weekends. It's like, bad shit will happen if we've got a Saturday and a Sunday available.
And so, but like so he gets all completely, you know, to the suicidal point in like about 48 or 72 hours. Doesn't actually die. Wakes up in a hospital, and they kind of cleaned his clothes and bought him a ticket back to his original starting point where he's like,
right,
guess I'm going to be a teacher, not bitch anymore. And it's like, well, if they were willing to do that, they could have done that before he got to the point of suicide.
I'm trying to figure what John's lesson is. Because he starts out just being very disdainful of
condescending.
Yeah, of the small town and everybody in it. There's that great little line from Donald Pleasance early on when John's making fun of the sheriff, like calling him stupid, and he's like, well, there's in this town there's farming, which is death, and mining, which is worse than death. Do you want him to sing opera too?
Yeah.
He's like, that's nice. Of course, and then later Donald Pleasance is singing opera, which I thought was really
cute. Yeah, but he also does say something along the lines of, okay, you're stuck in a shithole, you might as well decide to like it. You know, like, none of these people are going anywhere, so they're going to drink and have fun, because what's the alternative? Constant existential dread.
Yeah.
So they just get drunk and gamble and shoot things
and
don't care.
It seems like the really couple of rednecky guys are kind of shitty people.
Yeah, they seem legit shitty.
The rest of them are nice to the point that it makes them uneasy, I feel like.
And to be fair, because I thought that there was going to be, like, a legit killy, horror-y movement in
I wondered
in
at
this.
What point he was going to wake up inside out. Yeah.
Right. And so I was like, I kept waiting for the horror to start, and so everyone insisting on buying him drinks and, like, giving him a place to sleep and taking him on the next thing, going, nah, don't worry about it. You don't have any money right now, but don't worry about it.
Hmm.
And I was like, eventually that is going to come due. And it never does. They are just legit being nice, horribly self-destructively nice.
Right.
But nice.
Yeah, you get those, like, during the party, where there's, like, people laughing and faces going in and out of focus and the camera wheeling around and these quick cuts, and it is usually what you see right before you, like, cut to the pile of entrails the next day.
Or the dude tied to a bed and someone standing over him. Or...
Yeah.
Yeah, so I kept thinking, oh, here's where it starts, and then it never was. And again, that's just a problem of expectation, as I expected this to be very... Because I swear to God, when I listened to the episode last week, it was something about blah, 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 Australian movies, like a Wolf Creek, and I was like, okay, I've seen Wolf Creek. So I kept waiting for crazy
no,
redneck
the other
with
one
a
was,
knife.
The other one Charlie was talking about was the one that's like...
Wolf oh, okay, Creek, so I conflated these. So I was like, okay, some point one of these crazy rednecks, when they're on the kangaroo hunt, is going to start, like, hunting him. And so I kept waiting.
He's like, run, motherfucker.
Yeah, I kept waiting for something to happen and going, I don't get it. Also, holy fuck, this movie's long.
Although, to be fair to Charlie, I believe at one point in that broadcast you did say, I mean, Wake and Fright, it's not really a horror movie, except it's got this kind of existential dread thing going. So I think you prepped that.
I conflated the two. Yeah.
And we stepped up for it anyway.
Yeah.
The thing with this movie is, it's not, you're right, if you're kind of expecting that kind of, you know, the crazy backwoods, that's not a knife, this is a knife kind of situation to happen.
This is also
in a horror way, it doesn't. But, you know, when you watch John, to me, when he gets to the point, like, towards about, yeah, towards the end of the movie, but he really hits that breaking point where he's looking around this decrepit cabin and this defunct, crazy-ass doctor and no money and this, like, incredibly primal environment that he's in. To me, the kind of the horror of the breakdown of it is that he's basically come to the fact that the John that we've come to at that point basically doesn't deserve to live. Like, he's not a worthwhile human. Like,
yeah.
The version of himself that shows up in that place is so worthless and so shallow and so judgmental and so passively mean and so empty that he might as well die. He should just step in front of a train, you know, like, the world would have been a better place. And so this guy that comes walking out of there is still alive, you know, technically, but he's a different dude, ultimately. And that other guy basically didn't deserve to live. The other John didn't deserve to live. When he comes out of there, he's so profoundly changed and so profoundly broken that the only way to go is up. And that's where that breakdown comes into play, where you get to the end of it, like, fuck, hey. You know, I mean, it's that breakdown, that internal breakdown that makes it a, you know, pretty remarkable. Yeah, and the fact that it's filmed, you know, beautifully, and, you know, you get these kind of supporting guys like Chips Rafferty and Pleasance and these guys that are in the kind of periphery that really kind of make it.
Yeah, Donald Pleasance is a weird addition to this movie.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
He is a different creature. He's a different species than those. Well, I guess you have the guy.
He's kind of supposed to be.
You have the nice dude who's got the nice house and seems to have his shit pretty much together. And then you've got the two just redneck dipshits. And then you got the doctor, who is some weird hybrid of the two, where he is entirely a redneck dipshit, but on the same. At the same time, he's way, way better than that.
Well, he's the guy that... He is what John could have ended up doing. Is just saying, well, fuck it, I guess this is what I do now.
Right.
I'm going to wallow.
Yeah.
You know, because he's smart like John, but he's decided to give up. And he's just going, I guess this is my life now. I'll get kept in beer and food by all these other idiots as long as I do, you know, patch them up when they break an arm fighting in a bar. That's good enough for now. I've settled. And, you know, I think that's the thing. Is like, he's the other way John could have gone at the end of this movie. Is just settling to stay there and go, I guess I can't get out of this town. Might as well just get my own shit shack and see if they have kids here that need teaching or if I can, you know, work in a mine and just get drunk all the time and hunt kangaroos.
There was a fantastic... That is a fantastic little moment when he's, like, 50... He's hitchhiked, like, 50 miles out of town to the next town over. And he's got the guy who's going to take him all the way to the city... Falls asleep in the truck and wakes up back the fucking...
Which you had to know that's what was going to happen. Yeah. But it was a good thing. Of like that called to mind the conversation he had with the sheriff or whatever it is the first time in, where he talked about the suicides and goes, well, that's one way to get out of town. Yeah. And when he ends up back there, I'm like, this is one of those movies where, you know, like in The Mouth of Madness, where they keep driving out of the town and then ending up right back there. He's having a real-world version of that. He's either going to kill himself or say, fuck it, and go get drunk. And, you know... They have a happy ending or whatever, but, you know.
So, did he fuck Donald Pleasance?
I was wondering about that, too.
Well, that's a good question.
I could read that either way.
Heavily implied.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
Because, like, they're rolling around, and you're like, oh, geez, why did you guys kiss already? And then,
there's that long...
you guys are... Why don't you guys kiss already? And then you fade to black, you fade back in the next morning. He doesn't have a shirt on, and Donald Pleasance is naked from the waist down.
No. I assumed that, yeah, they ended up...
Right.
Fucking.
I mean, it's no thing either way, but it is an interesting wrinkle to the whole story, right?
Mm-hmm. Which, again, just for this character, that's another... Well, there's another rung that I've slipped. You know,
which is weird that he, you know, he couldn't quite get it going with the town slag, but
yeah,
he can get it up for Donald Pleasance.
Yeah, he ends up getting all. Well, see, I don't know that he did. I assume he got.
That girl is so bizarre too.
Yeah, she's creepy as shit. Because, again, yeah, I thought that was where the chicky lures him out, and then they get him.
But know, then like, he just has, like, a... starts crying or whatever?
Well, he has a little bit... I think he's the regret because he has the girl he loves. He's also wasted.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, all that, you know, contrives to have him just go, and I'm barfing.
Right.
Like,
I rewound that a couple of times because I couldn't tell if she had, like, kicked him in the nuts or not.
Yeah, because for a second, like, did she stab him or something? But, like, no, it's... Yeah, just him, I think, having all of that shit. Because he's, you know, clearly seeing cross-eyed by then.
Yeah.
And then just, you know... I think it's just, it's too much for him to handle.
So I was kind of baffled by this movie, because it is dressed in a look and a feel and some of the tropes of a straight-up horror movie.
Yep.
With the local yokels and the constant air of menace.
And the barren wasteland.
You know, what they do with the film stock and the cuts and everything. But it is... It's entirely not that.
Yeah. I wonder how much differently I would have thought of this had I gone in with no expectations or different ones.
For a while, I was very angry at the movie for not doing stuff. I have to admit.
Yeah.
But honestly, though, even taking it at as what it is, because it is what it is, It
are what it are.
Over there.
It are what it are. Is that it is too long and too slow. There are big stretches of this that could have been condensed. I think you could probably lose 20 minutes out of this and not lose any narrative.
Certainly.
Like, the Rue Hunt goes on forever. Just the guys...
Well, there are two, basically. Yeah. There's the during the day bit, yeah. And then there's a whole ton of drinking.
And then, we're going to do it again. Like,
and then,
yes, you are.
And you're like, oh, I guess we're going to watch all of it, too. And there are bits of that are compelling as far as what, you know, you watch the degradation of this man, but you could string those together a little more quickly.
Even the... Just the guys in the gambling hall, you just take ages circling around there and... Like, yes, there are a lot of interesting faces in there, but by the time you do one circuit of it, like, Christ, like, that's...
You've seen it all. Yeah, and the fact that, like, I get it. It would take a couple minutes to go and have every single person go collect every single bet and then place all the new bets before we start the next round, but you can cut.
Right.
You can edit.
It is a film.
You know? So, yeah, it was filmed perhaps a little bit too documentary style. Like, we're going to take you through every moment of this guy's day.
But it is kind of fascinating that... Everybody's got all those side bets, and they all remember them, and everybody
honest.
Is honest about
yeah.
paying
it's
out.
Just like, okay. But again, they all probably know each other to a degree, so it's a lot easier. Like, okay, I bet Carl and Lenny 50 each. So when it comes up, you go, well, okay, go pick Carl and Lenny.
So is this the point of this movie, though, that these people are better than John is? And
maybe.
John just needs to see the light? Or is it that they are... unambitious, and they drag him down to their level.
Well, they're both.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, because that's trying to figure out what the point is.
They are straightforward and honest, but they are very comfortable being the lowest common denominator, if not lower than that.
They've settled.
You know, exactly, yeah. They are... That life, which we would consider pretty desperate and disgusting, is enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a loss to him as a guy that we see as having potential to go down to that level, whereas we assume they kind of never had a shot in the first place. However, you know, they're people, and they're good people. They're honest. They help him out. Like, right. The guy survives purely on people's good graces for that whole time he's there. Unfortunately, by hanging out with people that do horrible things, he too starts to do horrible things. But nothing they do is really... ever takes advantage of another person. I mean, they smash up that one guy's little shack, but you get the feeling that's not that big a deal to that guy.
Yeah, because he's less coming at you with a shotgun and more like, oh, you scabs.
God damn it, get out of here. Yeah, you know, like, it's... You know, they take care of each other. Like, everybody's buying everybody else a drink, and they get mad when you won't let them be generous to you.
Yeah.
So it's... Yeah, no, you know, they're doing the best they can. Unfortunately, their means are kind of disgusting.
So where do we end up with John, though? Because, like, he swears off drinking to pull his life back together, but then on the train, the guy offers him a beer and he takes it.
And I felt like that was him learning that neither one of those things is okay. It's somewhere in the middle.
So you think he's not just gonna go and start drinking again? It's more of a, well, yeah, I can take drinks from people. I don't have to be a dick about the world, but I can also just go teach my time out and...
Yeah, see, I thought that was him coming full circle from refusing the drink when he gets on the train on the way out to accepting the drink on the way back as, yeah, it's okay to be friendly to people. You don't have to think of yourself as better or aloof or aside from them. So, like, yeah, he'll be a guy that will perhaps treat people a little nicer, even if he thinks that they're of a different class than him. And, you know, but hopefully also go, but, you know, that way lies madness. I'm not going to become that,
right.
But I don't have to be somehow morally superior.
Because I can still taste Donald Pleasance's dick.
Right.
And,
and it,
you know, the
Pleasance?
Rest of the story. I'm sure it was Pleasance.
Anything else we have to say about this one? Charlie, what about you? Like, it's, what's the...
Now, you're the one who knew this movie before we did. What's your read on it?
I don't know. You know, my feeling on this one is, I mean, it's funny because the director, Ted, how the hell you pronounce his last name, also directed Weekend at Bernie's.
What?
I see the similarity, sure.
That's ridiculous.
Which is kind of wild. But the thing that really struck me with this movie, and the reason why it still sticks in my ribs a little bit, is that, I mean, everything you said about, you know, John's sort of pathway and the ending point on the train back, you know, I mean, I think everything you said is accurate, but to me, it's sort of like in this whole process of like getting down and dirty with these kind of very primal, very base level people, he kind of comes face to face with this more like base level, you know, way to be a human, and just sort of realizes that he's just sort of faking it. And I just, like I was saying before, it just, you know, it's like that version of John just doesn't really deserve to live because he doesn't actually really live. I mean, this whole trip from the Christmas, and then the whole reason why I started betting in the first place, and all the rest of it. These are all very fake, very superficial, very shallow things. And, you know, the base level of humanity, like, he doesn't have any connection to that. He's not actually, he doesn't have that balance in his own life. And so I think it's a little weirder and get a little scarier and get a little just really running out of control. By the tail end of the thing, it's just sort of like, you know, if this guy dies, it'd be a favor. But he doesn't actually physically die, and that's what makes it really interesting to me, and it still does, you know, going back and watching it again, is that when this guy that shows up, the guy that walks out, is physically the same human being, but that internal depth of, like, self-knowledge or, like, self-image, that part of it that goes away is really compelling in terms of something being scary or being, you know, being unsettling, because there are scenes in this movie that are to me at least, just very unsettling. And I want to go back to, you mentioned about the thing in the betting hall, Josh, and you're saying about kind of once you get once around the bend or whatever else, it made me think actually a little bit of like certain scenes in like The Wicker Man and Season of the Witch, things like that, where old Season of the Witch, new bullshit, but where you just kind of get that like constant, like cyclical focusing on faces and expressions and stuff. And it's one of those things where that repetition, to me, almost plays into the rhythm of his losing his shit over the second and third acts of the thing, where that, like, repetition, man, like, this, you know, looking out into the nothingness, and you see nothingness in these people's faces, and there's all these parallels and stuff, and it's just perpetual, it's perpetual, it's perpetual. All those things are, to me, are like, they all play into that. They all play into this, you know, reflection of nothingness that he has to look into. And
I think it's superfluous in The Wicker Man, too. Like, as much as I really like Wicker Man, there are times when the guy is just freaking out and everybody's looming around him laughing that go on way too long, and I think it's just a 70s thing to do, where you're just like, well, we got all these fucking extras, man.
The money, though, you know?
Although I was looking at the production stills on IMDb from this, and Christ, there are some beautiful shots in this.
Yeah.
It is amazingly well shot. They have the picture of Donald Pleasance with the coins on his eyes. There's one. There's a problem with this call. But yeah, just absolutely beautiful staging of shots and cinematography for some of this. But it just has that 70s sensibility.
And, you know, stuff like that does come in and out.
Continues to be connectivity issues. So I'm not even going to start talking about the cinematography again, because apparently that makes the router go crazy.
Yeah.
So let's just wrap up on this. it's one, and this happens a lot, where I find myself sitting here squirming, going like, I don't think that I liked this very well, but I acknowledge that it is of an era, a different era, and so is not really fit to my sensibilities. At the same time, though, Jesus Christ, could it have been edited a little bit better? And I don't really get, by the end of it, what it was for. I mean, what you said makes a lot of sense, but I'm still not convinced. I think I would have liked it better if it had just started rolling credits after that gunshot.
Oh. Oh, that's interesting.
Which is darker, you know, but it, yeah. Just having him be like, well, I had my 3 days of being real fucked up and I'm going back home. Like,
well, the idea that there would have been permanent consequences to his craziness is perhaps more interesting to me, too, as opposed to the idea of he does kind of just get sent home with a pat on the back and a swat on the ass, and then he's just kind of free to go on about his business. A little wiser, perhaps, but basically unscathed.
Although I can't imagine if that happened, sitting in this chair going, and you know, you could tell the screenwriter was out of ideas because he just killed him off. Yeah. So maybe I'm impossible to please.
That's pretty true.
So as far as ratings go for this, I feel like I've got to hit it at like a 5 out of 10 Matilda's Waltzing.
Mm.
I didn't hate it, but I'm very confused about it.
Yeah, it was, I mean, again, like, I think my big problem, too, is just...
And it's not a horror movie. You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's a horror podcast. In that context, it's probably a 3.
Certainly not the first non-horror movie we watched. But,
yeah, that's true.
But yeah, it's, you know, calibration of expectation is an issue for this one for me, but, I mean, it's a character study that dives pretty deep into one dude's kind of limits of what he can handle. And that's interesting in a way, but it's not kind of my usual... the thing I'm usually into, so I don't know. It was, parts of it were well done, and Adam has taught me to like parts of things, but I wouldn't watch it again or recommend it, I don't think, unless I knew this is exactly the kind of shit that someone gets off on. It's just, to me, it doesn't have enough of a broad appeal. So I'd go, yeah, this is like a 4 out of 10 kangaroo boxings.
So what's in the box?
Kangaroo!
That would have made the end of 7 so awesome. Just what's in the box?
Kangaroo foot just flies out and kicks him in the side of the head with, like, or voiced by David Koechner for some reason or something.
Or just a boxing glove on a kangaroo's paw. Yeah.
Oh, boy. So that's the thing. All right, what about you, Charlie?
Yeah, I'm going to kind of go opposite with y'all just because you're right that it isn't a traditional horror movie, definitely. But the kind of, like, internal death of a shallow person is something that I find really interesting. And the guy, Gary Bond, I believe is his name, that played John, I think just, you know, you don't see a lot of those understated performances, especially in, like, late 60s, early 70s. It's usually just tucked British dudes or, like, really outlandish, sort of bloated white American guys.
Yeah, overall, he's pretty good.
Roles.
He is?
You know, for, yeah, and overall, well, of course, overall. I mean, I figured that was implied. but to me, it's like that internal breakdown where it's not outlandish and showy, and it's just really dark and sad. It's something that I really find interesting, and I you know, for me, it's like, but by the time you get to the end of it, it's, I feel very beaten up by the whole thing, and so I find it to be just a beautifully shot, wonderful character study about internal death that I find really, really great. And so I'd probably go in the, you know, 7, 6 to 8 range, probably in that area.
Cool.
Donald Pleasance is with coins on his eyes.
There we go. Perfect.
I just don't know if I buy it.
What?
I mean, maybe that's the heart of it.
The premise?
Yeah, that he's gone on a journey and then he's learned anything. And that any of this has anything to do with anything in reality?
What is real, man?
Well, exactly. Well, I understand that it's not a documentary. That I understand that the conceit of the film is that the guy does these things. I don't know if I believe him as a character. Maybe part of it. Part of it is that I'm so sure that he had sex with Donald Pleasance.
And
nobody's
jealous.
Remarking on that, and it's strange that I'm glad that it didn't get weird between them.
That's true.
I guess. That his whole speech about about sex is pretty fun and pretty 70s.
Donald Pleasance, yeah.
I was like, everybody should fuck everyone. What's the matter with that? It's a natural thing that you do. Just like when you're hungry, you eat. And when you're horny, you fuck. Like, okay. Hmm. You can see that. I mean, when I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm angry, I eat. When I'm bored, I eat. When I'm horny, I eat.
Yeah.
I've been married for 11 years. All of the emotions are pretty much channeled at the gut.
Yeah, that's true. It's a defense mechanism. What's our last movie?
That's where the kangaroos kick you. Last movie is The Battery.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or La Batería, sadly.
Pretty.
Sometimes Spanish is really lazy about that.
God damn it, Spanish. Up your game.
At least make an effort.
Yeah.
The Battery, the touching story of Bon Iver and chubby Johnny Depp.
I don't get those references.
Surviving an apocalypse. Well, chubby Johnny
that
Depp.
That one I guess I kind of get. Except I would have said more like a Zach Galifianakis wannabe.
Yeah. No, chubby Johnny Depp is Mickey.
Oh, I'm so confused then. What the hell are we talking about?
Bon Iver is a musician that has a giant beard.
Okay.
And kind of looks like that guy.
Okay.
The bearded guy.
Okay. And then how is the other guy at all like Johnny Depp?
Only in that he looks exactly like Johnny Depp and occasionally has his mannerisms.
Did we watch the same movie?
Yeah. The guy, Mickey, the guy with no beard,
looks nothing like Johnny Depp.
Chubby Johnny Depp.
I think that works alright.
You guys are cray.
Okay, chubby Johnny Depp.
So because he has kind of that same formulation of facial hair that makes him Johnny Depp?
The same facial hair, the same eyes, and the same expression. Yes.
I am not...
You put some eyeliner on that guy, he's chubby Johnny Depp.
I guess I don't see it at all.
I guess he is a little Zach...
I'd go more Zach Galifianakis for a writer, director, star guy. Bon Iver.
I wanna, just real quickly...
I guess Bon Iver doesn't have a giant beard anymore.
Yeah, he looks nothing like that guy.
I'm going to excuse myself to the restroom real quick because when you guys took a break, I just sat here, so now I got to use the restroom. So I'm going to go. I'll be back in a minute. So I'm going to condense
your peeing time by the magic of radio.
So anyway, not Johnny Depp guy.
Everybody's fluid drained?
Yes.
Yep.
Excellent. Anyway, in this movie, it is months into the post-zombie apocalypse beginning, and it's basically just two dudes kind of showing the boredom and ennui that set in once you've kind of gotten to relative safety.
It's a film that dares to capture the tedium of a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, it shows you the very realistic aspect of what it would be like to be out in the middle of nowhere where you don't really have to worry much about zombies. And there's a reason that's not the part that most movies show.
And that you don't... I respect this movie for taking that tack... Like, taking on a zombie apocalypse with this budget and coming up with the story that they can tell. I just really hated both of these characters. Watching them being stuck with each other for hours felt like I was stuck with them for hours.
I like Beardo.
He's such an asshole.
But he's not, really.
He fucking throws a zombie in the room with... Johnny Depp.
That's pretty douchey. But
the whole time he does nothing but give Chubby Johnny Depp shit, and then Chubby Johnny Depp is useless.
Okay, because the other dude is a pussy and doesn't do anything ever. He insulates himself from his entire reality by constantly having headphones on, and this guy's like, bro, like maybe we could engage in the world.
Yeah, but he's a total dick about it.
Sure, but I feel like after months of watching a guy be a little pussy, you'd be like, I'm getting sick of this shit. Time to be more drastic.
That, like, a married couple after the zombie apocalypse would fall to bickering and would argue the whole time, but that is also a movie I wouldn't want to see. It is just, these guys just fucking argue.
But it's like, it's also, Beardo is carrying Other Dude. Other Dude is a zombie snack without Beardo, I feel like Beardo can be like, dude, start pulling your goddamn weight.
I will grant you that if Beardo isn't a nice guy, there's no reason why he wouldn't have dumped Chubby Johnny Depp a long time ago. But he's so abrasive and unpleasant, and Mickey is such a whiny little bitch.
I think they're just spending
time with either of them. You know...
What about Beardo's dance party?
Yeah.
That made me so happy. Just him swinging booze and dancing to some awesome song. And
awesome song.
I love that song.
One thing that I was looking forward to talking with you about in this movie is the bullshit indie soundtrack.
The rest of the soundtrack didn't do it for me. That song.
Oh, you mean, like, Josh, are you referring to the really excellent soundtrack that's really well put together? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it's super bad. I'm sorry, man. It is everything that people who aren't fans of indie music think indie music is. And I'm somebody who really enjoys the vast middle section of indie rock. But this was way out in the, like, past your Bon Ivers and your Vampire Weekends into the hinterlands of annoying.
And so, yeah, I'm totally unfamiliar with all that stuff. I know, like, that one song was pretty dope. And I was like, yeah, boogie down, Chubbs. And that was pretty great.
That is an interesting idea. Like, that is one approach, right? The guy who is excited about the zombie apocalypse, and unlike all of the, like, neckbeards who are excited about the zombie apocalypse but, like, are on blood thinners or have glasses, he's a guy who is actually pulling it off.
Yeah.
And doing a pretty decent job of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you need? You need, like, 15 minutes of establishing their relationship. The shit that is, like, 80 minutes of this movie's runtime should be 15 minutes. Then they have the conflict with Annie. Then they fucking get to the orchard. Then they figure out what's up there, and it's something super interesting. And then the movie plays out from there.
But, no.
Which is a totally different movie, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, and a much better one.
What do you think, Charlie?
No, you're dead ass wrong. Here's the thing. Okay, here's first things first. So, you referenced Vampire Weekend and Bon Iver in the same sentence, which please don't ever do again.
Charlie, you're disappointing me, because first things first, you've got to say that guy doesn't look anything like Johnny Depp. So we're going to say that's item 1A on all that slide.
Oh, Lord. All right, well, anyway. So let's get that out of my first. So here's the thing, is that, like, this whole, the part that you're referring to, Josh, as far as the whole thing about being cutting down to 15 minutes, part of what makes this movie so excellent is that the relationship between these two, one guy who's gratingly annoying, one guy who's passively annoying, they're both annoying people. But ultimately, the point
makes we agree
this,
on that.
Their relationship is so interesting is that you've got these two people who, through either avoidance or, like, gusto, are dealing with the situation that they're in or whatever else, but they desperately crave, on a subconscious level, human interaction and human connection and human care. And they're not going to talk about it. They're not going to. I mean, the closest conversation they have about human contact, human interaction, and how desperately they need it is them playing catch. That scene where they're playing catch, they're just bullshitting about nothing, is one of the more is a very human scene. You know, it's like all the rest of this humanity is just gone to hell, and they've got this little grasp of humanity left. And what do? They odd couple each other. They bicker and they pick at each other or whatever else. But it's like this little slice of humanity they can hold on to. And that can't be done in 15 minutes. I mean, this is not Smurfs, you know. It's a little deeper than that. It doesn't have to be spoken out. You know, it's these scenes that, like, establish humanity as the last little bit that they've got left that they're just grasping onto. But they don't know how to articulate that. It's not a spoken thing. Mm-hmm. I think those scenes are very important.
Yeah, I would land on Charlie's take on that much more. I don't think it's, like, an excellent film, but I definitely, like, it drags here and there for me. But it was, like, yeah, I feel like I don't have the hatred or see, you know, Beardo as being the super awful dude where it's like, hey, guy whose life I'm repeatedly saving, maybe you should learn to fish too. No, fuck it, we got cans of food. Okay, maybe you should learn how to kill zombies so that if you ever need to kill a zombie, you can kill a zombie too. Fuck it, I don't wanna. Okay, maybe you should do anything ever to help our situation aside from leech my food and supplies, guy. But he never actually yells that at him. He just keeps going, why don't we do it? And when the guy's like, fuck it, alright, point taken, make a fire, we'll just cook the canned food. You know, like, and then when a guy's feeling really down about Annie, he's like, alright, let's play some catch. And he's like, you know what you need? You need to get, like, a double out. So he, like, sets up that fake play like you do when you're a kid, and you're like, and he's, oh my god, he's going to reach for it, and he gives him one of those, which is, like, the cutest little, like, there's not any comfort in this world. You can't, like, go get him a beer. You're in a forest. So he gives him, like, the saving play in a game that will never really be played again in the world because everybody's dead.
Yeah, but at the like, same time, constantly he has this kid non-stop sub-Jason Lee banter where he's just constantly berating the dude and never stopping. It's like, you know what?
Because dude needs to be berated.
Either walk away from him or shut the fuck up. If any of this is, like, you know that he's not going to change his shit. If any of this has, is so important to you that you can't stand it, fucking walk away from it.
But that disregards the premise that I think Charlie rightfully pointed out, which is that, like, you would rather have someone around than no one. And even if he's not going to do anything except maybe scream as he gets bitten,
like,
that's
so
still
shut the
a
fuck up. Like, but don't, is, do, don't but give me an hour and a half of people complaining
but
at
the
each
thing
other.
Is, they are months into this. He might have shut the fuck up for as long as he could, and now he just can't help it. He's like, fuck it, I gotta say something. Like, you know how it is. Like, you're married, you've been in relationships. Mm. You can't ignore things that bother you indefinitely. Eventually that shit comes out.
See, I just don't...
And I think it proves he's a nice guy, that he doesn't just ditch.
He does serve some use. I mean, when you have to take a shit, you need to have somebody to keep an eye out for things.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's sort of like, I think discrediting Mickey as being completely useless, I don't think is accurate, because you need to have another body around. I mean, like, even when they come
what
to
mean by that, he could be anybody.
Deal, like, they figured out a way to, like,
he could be Johnny
you
Depp.
Gotta have three people, you gotta have four people, you gotta have two people, whatever.
Yeah.
And there's a way to make it work. You have to figure out, like, a dynamic to be able to stay alive, even if the person you've got's, you know, so obsessed with the way life used to be and has kind of rendered himself kind of useless. I mean, the scene where he's shaving and another scene where he's doing the lottery tickets are just, like, they make you angry, but they also make you sad, too, at least for me, anyway. They just sort of, you see this, like, and I can relate to both of them, honestly. That was the other thing that I love about their characters, as grating as they can be at times, is that I can relate to both of them. Ben's character, the beard he has, as I was saying, you know, he's really gone full on this because maybe he had some stuff in his past that sucked. Maybe he got his heart broken. Maybe he got a real shit on kind of life. And this kind of reset has made him kind of like, well, okay, well, I'm going to keep charging my own damn life, damn it. Nobody else is going to tell me otherwise. Whereas, like, Mickey's character may have been, like, the popular kid in high school, may have been, like, the kind of, like, the ladies' man or the kind of man about town or whatever else. And so, like, letting go of that concept of humanity is so scary that he just holds on to it in really unreasonable and stupid ways. And so, sort of, like, I can kind of relate to both of their characters in some degree, where it's, like, he's, like, I can see where, at that stage... You know, what else have you got to hold on to? Well, you've, you know, somebody else, some other damn human being to deal with. And what you see in them. I mean, I see that Ben and Mickey kind of see in each other something that's useful, even though they can't articulate it. I think maybe, Josh, one of the things that frustrates you about this as far as the bickering stuff is, like, maybe it's like the things that they're saying are frustrating versus the things that they're not saying. I mean, is that maybe...
No, I think you relate to these characters because you just created them.
No, that's mean.
I'm not saying that to be mean. I feel like you are bringing a lot of depth to these characters that I do not see in that film.
Huh.
I see two annoying dipshits bickering with each other, and that's pretty much all I could get. Like,
but see,
whereas on the show we have three annoying dipshits.
Right, exactly. I mean, clearly, three is the magic number. But, I mean, as much as you know, say, well, if they hate each other so much, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, from his conversation with Annie and his desperation to find other survivors, Mickey does want to go find someone else to hang out with besides Beardo. Like, he would rather be with someone else, and that's why it's so imperative to him, whereas Beardo's like, I'm surviving. That's really all I need to do, you know? And, well, like, he'd be happy with Mickey or whoever as long as that person kind of plays along and wants
they
to
play also
catch.
Have completely opposite goals, where, like, Mickey wants to...
He wants to recreate...
Yeah, he wants to approximate what he had as much as possible, and Ben is the absolute opposite of that. Yeah. And, yeah, like...
But, yeah, I think they would gladly trade who they're with if they found someone better. They haven't.
Well,
but if you're a guy who's making a movie...
Cockapocalypse.
Wait, what?
Cockapocalypse, too, is like...
Cockapocalypse. You know, where do you live?
There's our episode title.
Cockapocalypse.
But you got to think about it in terms of the baseball part of it, too. I mean, Mickey's a situational guy. He's a guy that they pull out of the bullpen. He's a guy they pull out of the bullpen to to bring in situations. Everything's controlled for him. I mean, he's put into certain situations, he has one specific job, whereas, you know, Ben is the utility catcher, he's a bullpen catcher. He just sort of sits there and, you know, has to take it, and she sort of has to slog through as much as he can stand when his knees give out. And so they're very different. I mean, their backgrounds, how they get slung in together, they don't have a background. You know, these double-A, triple-A ballplayer guys, they get shipped all around in different parts of the country, and they get stuck in with different teams and stuff. So, I mean, Mickey is kind of like a Fabergé egg in a lot of ways, whereas Ben's character is sort of like kind of the, well, we're going to take him for granted because he's already there kind of a character. I mean, or in terms of the baseball metaphor.
I wish they would have hit that a little bit harder, though. I think you get them playing catch a couple of times, but there is not this kind of grand baseball as a metaphor really expressed in the movie.
I feel like that if that was really heavy-handed, though, that would.
But for fuck's sake, there's not a lot expressed at all in this movie because there's so much empty space, and I get that he's trying to bring in the tedium. Of, you know, like a war is hours of tedium interspersed with seconds of terror.
Yeah.
And this gives us what feels like hours of tedium to our, like, this. Maybe this is getting a little too real for me that it just doesn't stop.
It's not a sexy zombie apocalypse by any stretch.
It's not.
Because I would assume that the interesting zombie apocalypse is happening wherever these people are holed up in their large thing.
Yeah.
That's where all the other movies are happening. And that's
like, that, it would be a decent idea to.
Yeah,
it's like.
To me, like when you as you build up all these things that you don't really that you're not caring for as far as these early scenes and these the tedium kind of stuff, to me all that stuff builds up to the once they're stuck in the car, and once things really kind of go downhill or whatever else, that kind of like real terror and that like human fear, you see on it. I give Jerry Garner a lot of credit. In terms of that whole last sequence of the movie, like when he gets out of the car at the very end of it, I was just like, I remember the first time I watched this movie, I remember Stan was like, fucking go get her, kill her, get her, go get her. Like, that's what I was just like, I was that invested in that loss. Because I don't think it was a loss he even realized. And I think when you see that human fear, that human, like, just that terror on his face as you kind of see things kind of fall apart even further once they've been. You know, kind of isolated and stuck, and they're basically the tick has been punched for them. That's to me, that's really tangible and really, really solid. And I really, as frustrating as he can be at earlier parts of the movie, at that point you're just like this is my guy at this point now. Like it's I'm there with him. You know, and that was my feeling. And it feels like Josh that you and I kind of had a different pathway through the tedium parts earlier on to get to that point. Because to me, by the time I got to that point, I was very invested. Once things even get even worse, you know, invested in.
They're going to continue to argue with one another, only that's not going to be broken up by scenes of playing catch. It was pretty much where I landed. Like, I'm happy that it hit you that way and that you had these moments with these characters, but man, I'd really. By the time they got in the car, they just. Argue more, and the situation gets more and more desperate. And then at the end, it's clear that they could have just done that at the very fucking beginning. Like, obviously, if he pulled it off, that would have been the first thing. And they mentioned, like, oh, we should do that thing that we did in Massachusetts. And then they don't. And then they make you sit there for another 20 goddamn minutes while they complain about the noise and while we, you know, like, it does a really good job of making us feel the trapped feeling that they're feeling, but Jesus Christ. And then by the end of it, when he starts to go out of the car and it kind of fades to white, I was like, oh man, don't give me some fucking bullshit ambiguous ending. And then I had enough time to go, actually, no, that would be the best way for this to end. What a great thing for that guy to do. Before it fucking flashed back in. It's like, nope, we made it out of the car. I made it out of the car with my shot-ass knee, and I'm fine, so I totally could have taken Mickey out of here at any moment. We were just having too much fun drinking each other's piss.
I feel like this
honestly,
is...
start the movie where the movie starts, and to me, that is where the movie starts. Yeah, the movie starts where it ends.
But why, though? Like, let me just ask.
It's just a different story.
Because the rest of it is boring as fuck.
There's 150 goddamn zombie movies you can find on Netflix that have the same fucking plot, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same goddamn thing over and over and over again. Cardboard cutout. Bunch of drooling zombies. Some hot chick scientist who's got a cure. And then the crazy scientist guy takes in a helicopter. And a whole bunch of more zombies. A bunch of people get killed. And at the end, same fucking movie over and over again, right? The same zombie thing over and over again.
Well, so he found something different to do, but it was something different that wasn't very interesting.
But it's not interesting to you.
Exactly.
That's true. I mean, to be fair, that is the only opinion you can have is your own.
That's fair, but I think what you're not doing in this, I don't think you're giving this movie enough credit for executing on an idea that nobody has a sack to do. Everybody's got a sack to throw $200,000 against another bullshit send-up zombie movie. It's the same goddamn thing over and over again. But, you know, to have somebody like put something like this together where I have nothing personally invested in this, by the way. I feel like I know these guys, but I just kind of feel like this takes a lot more presence of mind to put something together that really focuses on this just tired ass story and the apocalypse stuff over and over and over again to do it in a different way.
I would agree with that if I felt that he succeeded.
Okay, well, that's fair.
I can understand wanting to do something different, but I can't understand wanting to do this. Because he's come up with an interesting idea to me along the periphery that I don't think is what you see in every zombie film, where you have the idea of the orchard and the people kind of roaming around. And if anybody catches on to them, they'd have to kind of take them out. And
I mean, that's a large plot point to aspects of The Walking Dead. Like, that's been done to death.
I was interested in that part of it.
No.
But
then you just watched season 3 of The Walking Dead. And you could watch that movie.
I was not in the slightest interested in these dudes walking around.
No.
And being shitty to each other. And then stuck in a car being shitty to each other. And, like, when he shot Mickey, that was actually really affecting. I thought that was super cool. The rest of it's just like with the soundtrack, the beautiful soundtrack full of many quality songs.
It was just the one. Just the Chubbs McBeardo dance sequence. A good song.
Two assholes. I mean, like, I can see somebody doing like, I can see somebody going, you know what we've never seen in slasher films is like, an old married couple that bicker for like an hour and a half while the slasher movie is like happening around them. And you're like, sure. We've never seen that. And I think maybe you could, like a really good example of that would totally pull it off, but okay.
This is one of those movies that we stumble upon every now and then where the hatred one of us has for it makes one of us retroactively like it more.
Yeah, and
because I'm enjoying this movie more and more the more you hate it. Because like I came into this going, no, that was alright. Like, it was an interesting idea. It wasn't the best thing ever. And now I'm going, this is pretty fucking good.
I'm trying to
which is partly
get
Charlie's influence and partly me wanting to just like something you hate so much because this is like a high tension.
Well, because I'm trying not to get... I'm trying not to get too deep into like the hate zone with this because it's not like I was angry with the movie by the time I was done with it, like a high tension, because this is it's flat, but it didn't piss me off really. Like, it was unpleasant, but it's not. I wouldn't say that I like hated it. You know, I don't want to get angry with this movie because like I've. The reason why my score is like a point higher than I feel like putting it is that this is a guy who went out with $6,000 and he made a movie. Like, damn, dude. I've seen people with 10 times that budget make shittier movies than this.
It's what are we going to score this to? Because we got to wrap this up.
Christ, was the... Did he have to jack off to the zombie girl?
Yeah, he did.
Did that...
She was putting him on the glass.
She did. She was. Did that even make sense in the reality of the movie?
I don't care. It was pretty great.
Of course it did.
He's so desperate to see a female at that
point. I thought that had...
If you're really... If you see...
I did not think that played
in a dumpster, and you're really hungry, you see a bunch of crusty shit on it, whatever else. It's sort of like, you still need to eat, right?
And she
like
was pretty fresh.
Point, your humanity is so stripped away that, like,
she was funky
the disgusting aspect of what's actually happening isn't really the first thought in your mind. I think his desperate, childish, just ridiculous grasping at the humanity that's long dead, like, makes him do that. I mean, it's a disgusting sequence, but it's like, it makes total sense to me. Not for me. But I mean, like, in the context
no,
of
I think good cover.
I think you're protesting too much. I think. See, I didn't buy that as coming out of even the what little characters we had, the character establishment we had. But it, like, it's like I don't want to be mean to this movie, but I did not enjoy it, and I'm really confused at why it's at the top of a lot of people's lists, including yours.
Yeah, but, well,
I mean, before I had anybody else's input, this is what I had in my notes. Thus far, 20 minutes of two unpleasant dudes doing dude shit. Name check Tremors, woo. So we've got one guy who's into this, into survivalism and whatnot, and one guy who's just trying to stay alive. Neither of them are super compelling. He's jacking it to Zombie Girl? Realsies? This is tedious. There's some interesting stuff around the periphery here. That was a fairly dead-on simulation of the tedium of being trapped in a zombie apocalypse with two assholes. So, like, maybe I just failed to give it the deeper read that it deserves, or maybe that depth is something that you have to bring to it. I don't think that's a question we can resolve, but I gotta give it, like, 3 out of 10 eviscerated baseballs.
What do you think, Charlie?
I'm going to stick with where I put it on my list because I'm right. And I'm going to give it at least an 8 out of 10 deeper meanings.
I'm going to go with a slightly higher score than I think I anticipated giving it and give it a 7 out of 10 Chubbs McBeardo dance sequence. Because I swear to God, that made me happy. I went back and watched just that again. Because I loved that song. He was just so cute doing his little dance. I was like, this is great.
You contrarian hipster. You were not going to rate that movie a 7 at all.
No, I was going to give it a 5. And
as you said,
we've talked me into liking it a lot more in retrospect.
5 is a far more reasonable...
I don't know. Adam has talked me into liking movies better in retrospect too.
As far as, like... This is a movie that meets the minimum requirements of a movie, I think.
I think it's got more to it than that. Oh. Anyway.
So the moral of the story is don't try. Never try.
Yeah.
For next week, we are going to go with some movies that we think are going to be fun, and each of us gets to pick one, and they don't have a theme, really. I'm going to go with the original 1988 Night of the Demons because I just need something a little more breezy, I think. A little more easy, a little more beautiful.
A little more can I recommend up. Some extra credit on that?
Sure.
Potentially. Along with Night of the Demons, throw in the original Demons also.
Yeah. Also good. Which one is the one in the movie theater?
That's Demons.
Yeah, God, that's good.
It's so much fun. It's like ridiculous and crazy.
It is really fun. I'm doing a movie I heard about just this last week called Would You Rather, which was that just last year that came out or 2012? Mm-hmm. 2012.
It came out in 2012, but it got released in the spring.
Gotcha. So,
hey, you didn't find out about this just last week. We talked about it on the podcast like 6 months ago.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh, and I completely forgot about it. And I heard it mentioned on another podcast and was like, oh, that sounds cool. But anyway, it's probably not a great movie, but... Jeffrey Combs is in it, and I'd watch him eat a bowl of cereal. So I'm going to watch this movie and be like, yeah, Jeffrey Combs.
Given the...
You were in Reanimator.
Just like Malcolm McDowell, you were in Clockwork Orange.
No, he's lost all of the...
Miley Matlin, you were in...
Stuff that... Oh, that's right. Sasha Grey is in this, which I look forward to watching her die. I'm hoping she dies.
I watched this with trepidation because it has 3 or 4 names I'm familiar with, and yet... It didn't get any kind of release, which means it's probably not good. But we're going to try it.
A lot of horror doesn't get a great release.
Would You Rather, Night of the Demons, and Charlie picked, or we picked for Charlie because he mentioned it last week, The Loved Ones, and
yes,
Australian crazy ass horror films. So 2009, The Loved Ones.
You want to talk about we are what we are, batshit ending. There's another batshit ending coming for you in The Loved Ones.
You're going to have to...
Delightfully... crazy.
Whenever anybody says that, I have to ask, Is it that the entire movie took place inside someone's head?
No. It wasn't all a dream. There's nobody in a sanitarium.
Because nobody's going to set me up to watch fucking High Tension or Identity or Silent House or any of that shit ever again. I just decided I've reached my full of my bad this movie never happened dog. Anyway, Charlie, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Charlie.
Everybody, thanks for listening.
Thank you very
much for having me.
We will be at you next week. Please hit us up on horrorshowhotdog.com, facebook.com/horrordog, reddit.com/r/hshd, and at hshdpodcast on the Twittard. Thank you for joining us. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Say goodnight, Charlie.
Good night, Charlie.